You are listening to the This Life podcast with Dr. Drew Pinsky and me, Mike Catherwood.
That's right. We're doing it this time. So check it out. Thanks for listening.
You live.
You live, my friend.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy.
Good to see you.
It's good to see you. It's good to see all our guests. I'll be introducing them in just a second. This is a big show. Big show. Uh-oh. Some weird feedback coming on there.
It's not feedback. It's our producer.
Yeah, I know. It's a producer, our crack producer. Also, a reminder, Hydrolite, our friends at Hydrolite. You know I love this stuff. One of my guests, who I'm introducing in a second, just took a whole bunch of this without fluids. We'll see how that plays out.
I've saved people. I've saved their lives, I think, with Hydrolite.
Which reminds me, I was communicating with our friend Andy, and I should get him to we're working him through some of this stuff.
Andy Dick?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And maybe he could use a little Hydrolite.
He could use a lot of things.
I'll talk to him about that. And also, we have the Last House Sober Living. You can learn more about them at thelasthouse.net. We just interviewed the program director there, and I was pretty impressed with the guy. It's sort of a no-nonsense sober living, and as a result, no one wants to go because – well, right, you know – they'd rather go places that everything's kind and gentle, and you have rocks put on your back and massages, and you won't look at the ocean. That's not recovery.
I tweeted that the other day after Kevin Spacey checked into the same place that Harvey Weinstein apparently went. And I said, if you like the vibe of a facility, it's probably not the right facility.
Right. You should not like your therapy. You should like your therapist. It should be hard work. Speaking of hard work, Ginger Gonzaga, welcome.
Oh, there
it is. Hi. Yes. Thanks for having me.
You and I met Ginger first on the –
an orgy?
Show with Jim Jeffries.
Legit.
We were playing ourselves.
You
guys playing ourselves, and Ginger actually came in and did her line in the studio with us, which was very nice.
Yes,
I was just creeping on both of you.
That was very
kind. I'll be there that day.
So was Jim.
That's exactly right.
How was our buddy Jim? Everybody had in touch with him?
He just texted me today after ignoring a text for about a month, so we'll wait to text him back.
I saw him at something recently, and he seemed great.
He's got his wonderful show.
He seems happy and healthy.
Yeah. Ginger has an amazing film. I went and saw it at a film festival, and I'm telling you, I don't understand why it's not a topic of discussion out there, because it is sort of the film of the year for me
as a short.
Not only are you and Jason Ritter amazing acting-wise, but the concept to me blew me away.
Oh, my gosh.
Such a brilliant concept, and then just execute it just
crazy.
So you can see that Your Day film. It's called Your Day. YourDayFilm.org. You must go over there and watch it, Mike.
I will.
And also,
when I say I promise I'll watch something, I actually mean
it. Yay!
Okay, good.
Almost all other promises in my life are empty.
Just the viewing promises are the good ones. So if you want to get something and feel good about with Mike, just don't ask him to do anything except watch something you've recorded.
No, but my point being, though, if I tell you I'm not going to watch that, you know, I mean it. But if I say I promise you I will.
Well, normally when I ask you to watch something, you just go, why would I?
No,
why would
I say no.
You go, eat shit and die. Sort of
I say fuck you.
Oh, yeah.
Oftentimes, Drew will say nonsense.
Also, you've got this new film on Netflix called Dean.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Dimitri Martin directed it, and it's with Kevin Kline and Mary Steenburgen and Gillian Jacobs and my friend Rory Scovel, and it's great. We won Tribeca. It's a really...
Did you get to work with both Kevin and Gillian?
I didn't get to work with Kevin.
How crazy would that have been?
I know. Half of it is in New York, and that's the Kevin Kline side, and then Gillian and I are in the L.A. side.
And Gillian just did Love, right?
That was yeah.
Yeah, I got to do a round table where I sort of moderated for her.
She's great.
She's good.
Yeah, because
I think Community made her seem like just a certain kind of actress,
mm-hmm.
and she's got a lot more... She did Sex and Love Addiction, probably the best I've seen on screen. Because you know what she...
In Love.
In the series Love,
yeah.
What she got more than anybody was the self-loathing, and the sabotaging, all the stuff. She just nailed that.
That really is the hardest part of addiction.
Yeah,
people are always like, well, it's the drugs, right? And I go, well, I mean, yes, but it's really what it manifests more so than the actual substances. It's like some trainer I remember, I think it was Rob McDonald. He said, working out is just picking shit up and putting it back down.
Right.
The hard part is having the mental fortitude to really do something.
Yes.
And the same is with not using is not using.
Yeah.
It's very big. But it's the things that are attached to that. The shame and the self-loathing being at the top of the list. That is definitely the hardest
part. Especially when you're sort of slipping and sliding. You know, remember that? People, that she just got it. I don't know how she got it. I asked her, how'd you do that?
Yeah, because that's like not her history at all.
No.
Yeah.
She went and saw some meetings. She talked to some people.
Oh, cool.
That's it? Yeah. You nailed that so well. I was only kind of acutely aware of it because you brought it to life. They're like, oh, that is such an important part.
Do you ever
part
see
of it.
Shame? Yeah. The movie Shame?
Oh, that's my favorite movie. Dr. Drew, you have to see that.
Oh, come on.
Oh,
what's wrong
goodness.
With you?
What's it about?
Not only
sex addiction.
I have seen it.
Well, not only that, but you get actual shame because you get to see Michael Fassbender's thick, meaty dong.
Okay, you get shamed.
I get
also,
shamed.
You can see Ginger on I'm Dying Up Here. If you have not seen I'm Dying Up Here, I recommend it. Susan and I watched it religiously as it came out.
We want more.
Yeah, we want more. I want season two as soon as possible.
I think it's signed up, right?
Yeah.
They're all good.
Same cast coming back? Everybody coming back?
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Yeah.
It was the first season was sort of Jim Carrey's experience coming up in the comedy scene, sort of, right?
Yeah.
It was sort of everybody bringing their stories together. Mm-hmm. And writing the
it's based off of a book. I'm based off of From Jim's Life. So I know what happens to me in season two, which is exciting.
Uh-oh. Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
It's more fun for my character.
Nice,
yeah.
Nice. You did a great job.
A lot of that.
Watch episode 8. There's a little of that.
She had sex high on meth.
Yeah.
Did that about as well
that's
as
the best
seen
way to
do it.
That's the best way to do it.
So, all right, let's bring our guest in. The three of us are going to man the ship for a little while. We've got Jude Angelini in here. Rude Jude. Hey, man.
Hey.
His new book is called, what's the name of it?
It's called Hummingbird.
Hummingbird.
Right. Say what you see.
It's right there.
It's right there, Hummingbird. I thought that's. Then I saw something about a Velveteen Rabbit I was reading about. I'm like, well, maybe it's about the rabbit.
Triumphant follow-up to Hyena, which was an excellent, excellent book as well. You explained to us on Loveline where the name Hyena came from. Made a lot of sense.
Right.
Where did Hummingbird come from?
Well, I was on ketamine on a couch.
There it is.
And I was trying to figure out what I was going to call this book. And I was thinking about hummingbirds and how they're the symbol of joy in a lot of cultures. And they're like these little magical animals. And then I thought, I was like looking at them. I was like thinking about them. And I was like, these motherfuckers work really hard just to stay in the same spot. Yeah. And that's kind of like adulthood. It's like you're searching for joy, but you work hard just to maintain float. So it's a play on stagnation and depression.
Well, I saw a lot of that in the book. Most of the chapters that I was reading ended with that. Like, why am I doing this? Do you think I'd stop? You think I'd try something different? Do you in this book? I haven't gotten to the end of it yet. Do
I stop?
Do you try something different?
Yeah. Maybe.
Stopping, I don't know about it, but trying something different is what I'm hoping
well,
for.
Well, what different?
You.
What do you do different? You. Like, what do I do different? Like, what? Move? Fuck cooler chicks? Like, I don't know. What do you want me to
do?
That's
number one. You had this longing for smart. You had a longing for that in the book, right?
Yeah.
And so maybe, how would I do that different? How would I find that person?
Well, they're too smart to fuck with me. That's the rub.
Well, I
catch 22 here.
That's what I really empathize with in the book is that there's a sense that you feel like the chick that you long for is way too good for you
in your mind. Yeah,
but at the same time, no, because I'm like I'm better than you. Fucking chicks, like, come on, man.
But
like,
do you really think that when you're actually in the moment?
Yeah,
because
I like bootstrap my way up. Yeah. Like, I came from the soil, and I'm right here with everybody else. Like, I value myself. I just don't think they'd be super stoked about me going into K holes all the time. And I'd be willing to cut that to the weekends or something. Like right now, I'm not doing anything. Like, I do GHB, but I ain't do no GHB because I knew I had to come holler at y'all, and I got a brand new batch. I'm going to do that shit after I leave. Yeah. Shit's cloudy as fuck. I want to see what it's like.
It makes you buff, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's
right. I can do mad
push-ups
now. Yeah, I can do way more push-ups. Yeah.
You can hear Jude on XM Shade, XM 45 Shade channel. Also, get the book at hummingbirdbook.com. Read about that or get it at the usual outlets. Talk about where you did come from. I don't know if he and I have ever had that conversation.
I really wanted this hummingbird. I really wanted to. I wanted to talk for the flyover states, man.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm from the Rust Belt. I'm from outside of Detroit, Pontiac, Michigan, which is even like Detroit already has an inferiority complex, and then imagine like what the little brother city of Detroit feels like. It was just a redneck, lot of. You know, what's that book they call it with the Kentucky motherfuckers, Hillbilly Elegy?
Yeah.
It's like Hillbilly Elegy mixed with black people and a smattering of Mexicans. And that was where I was from.
You got them all the way up there, huh?
Yeah, Mexicans, bro. Huh? Bro, yeah. Fuck yeah.
I thought we cornered the market in Southern California.
They got gangs and everything. Yeah, they're really doing it. Fuck. Yeah, so it was like just growing up in government housing out there, and I wanted to paint a picture of poverty that I feel like the NPR people, they like to fetishize poor black people and poor minorities, and they demonize poor white people, and I just wanted to show that, like, we're kind of all in it together, and right.
They fetishize, and then they say some of the most racist stuff.
Yes.
When they say, these people can't, and those, how can you expect these people? It's like, that's the racist crap I've ever heard out of somebody's
mouth. It's the racism of low expectations that
yes.
you see.
I
felt that, this is, can I? Turn
yes.
Me? No, I just nope. saw that movie, I, Tonya.
You're a woman.
Yeah.
Know your role.
No talking. I just saw that movie, I, Tonya, with Margot Robbie, based on Tonya Harding. Mm, yeah. And it's like a comedy, but it's actually really awful and sad. I called it Precious, just with ice skating in a
right.
more fun font.
Yeah.
And I was so weirded out when I was watching it because all the physical abuse in it and everything is so sad. And then I left and I was like, I think people, for some reason, in a sick way, allow this to be a comedy because they're like, ah, it's just white trash people.
Yeah,
like, it was like okay to make it, like, for Precious, like, you had to like call it out and see it what it was. But for some reason, because like, white trash, I don't know why white trash is like, for some reason that's funnier. I don't know.
Right.
I grew up in Modesto, California. So
yeah.
Like, I feel like
they
haven. Were my grandparents. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
And yeah, I just found that really odd. Like,
it
as,
is,
a, as a
I'm
culture.
Trying, I'm trying to figure it out. There's got to be a reason because
yeah.
we.
Well,
because look, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. There's a large history of white people being in positions of power
sure.
and being in positions
so,
of
yeah.
discriminating
yeah.
against others. It's the same reason why you can watch any sitcom on a network and it's like, my dumb, silly husband,
yeah.
there's no way he could get by without me because I'm a smart woman. If you did it back, if you, like, a woman was completely incompetent and the wife was just a
yeah.
dumb bitch
sure,
and her
sure.
husband had to help her out in every way, you'd be like, this is the most chauvinistic, horrible
the
show.
Would
show.
Make it, yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
But I think that's when you know that we've made it. Like, when people are treated
yeah.
fairly
yeah.
for who they are, not like, yeah, like, it's, yo, I treat everyone like a
have
fucking
you,
human
have
being.
Have you ever met Theo Von?
Nah.
He has a similar idea that
yeah.
he's been chanting
he,
for
it's
a, while.
A different, it's a different type of white
it's,
poverty,
it's
but it's
southern,
same,
southern.
A lot of the same kind of issues.
Look, I just want to speak on poverty, though.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
you know what I mean? And it's like, and look.
Well, seriously, because the politicians never listen to people that pull up out of poverty. It's the last person they listen to.
And here's the thing, and I didn't go, I'm not indoctrinated by college. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of scrapped my way through, so I don't really buy into a liberal agenda. It is, no one's going to save you. Save your fucking self. Don't do things that are going to keep you broke. Arrests, teen pregnancies.
I feel like ketamine would keep me broke.
Go to fucking school. Ketamine can keep you broke. It got expensive, girl. Like, yeah, and look. Like, my family and my friends, I look around and we made, like, decisions that kept us broke, you know? And I just happened to get lucky and run with that shit. But, yeah, we spent money on bullshit. We didn't they made fun of us for having books in my neighborhood. They made fun of us for reading. They made fun of us for having plants, for eating vegetables.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Like, you get shit on for making healthy choices.
Right.
Like, oh, you think you're too good? You're trying to leave the group? You're trying to leave the group?
So I've got to pull you back in.
Yeah.
Which is so strange for me to hear growing up in a neighborhood that was so Chinese. I was very ashamed that I was a terrible student. And people would make fun of you for not studying, for not reading. Like, being – there was such a high level of achievement, at least academically.
Right.
That it was it was strange to hear, like the opposite being told, like the idea of studying being something to be
well, and that's an interesting thing because Chinese people are minorities, but yet
yep.
they have a culture of their culture is a different kind of culture where it's like, yo, you listen to your parents, you get good fucking grades, learn a fucking piano, you know, shit
yeah,
like that,
true.
And they tend to out earn fucking on average, they out earn white motherfuckers.
Well, somebody has studied this. There's a couple of Yale law professors. She's Chinese, he's Jewish, and they're Yale law professors.
That's a good combo
that's like
for success.
And they were noticing in their classrooms, they were seeing the sudden escalation of certain groups, and they tried to study why these groups, Mormon, Nigerian, Jewish, Chinese. That's what they saw in there. And to them, their family of origin, they sort of – it made sense to them. So they studied them, and they said that delay gratification. Yeah. Just delay. Don't get gratified for anything. Just keep delaying it. And then pretty soon just the way you live. Mm-hmm. Have a sense of purpose, like a specialness, a purpose. Is there a Filipino thing like that?
Well, I that's funny that you say that because I feel like Asian cultures, it's like delayed gratification. Or
everything's
like,
delayed.
But I feel like – my boyfriend's Jewish, and I'm like, your parents just loved you and told you you were good at everything that you did.
He's not a real Jew.
I know. Maybe he's some fake Jew.
They call him a FAJ, a fake
Jew. Yeah. Like in my head, that's my
I know he's telling you that's not your shit. Yeah. But
that's how I establish my Mexican street cred because I have a white last name. I'm only half, and I obviously don't, you know, appear very credible on the streets. But I will say, oh, no, my mom never said anything nice to me ever and just constantly shit on me. So it's like, okay, you're one of us.
Yeah.
I think education was the other. I think giving back to the community or something like that. But this purpose and delay were really the biggies. Have a sense of special purpose in the world. You're going to do something and delay. Don't try to gratify. Just work hard.
Was strong family in there at all? Because you see.
I'm not sure that they measured that, but in Mormons and that, you know what I mean.
Yeah, these are all cultures that value family. Yeah. Yeah.
Let me
generally speaking.
Let me tell you a very true story that will kind of put things in perspective. In my hometown, there was such a high Chinese population and Taiwanese population that they actually all collectively agreed 5 days a week of school, not cutting it. And Saturdays they had Chinese school.
Yeah.
And the San Marino Public School District just agreed. They're like, okay, if you want to go to Chinese school on Saturday so that you can get that extra 8 hours of studying and learning, go ahead. And so, I mean, that just puts in perspective that They had an idea.
In Chinese school, because my kids had friends that went to Chinese school too.
Yeah.
And it was Chinese language and math. Yeah. That's what they did on Saturday. But Kroll has been chanting family and education for like 15 years, and he's been eviscerated repeatedly. What about the school-to-prison pipeline? You're too naive about this. Poverty is a very complex thing. You've been there. He's been there too, by the way. He came up out of white poverty.
Yeah.
What is your take? What's the solution?
Look, man. Let's say it is the worst. You're waiting for the system to save you, you fucking moron. Go get it. And this is the only way I know out.
But
I don't know
really
any other plan.
If you really don't believe that that's there for you, then, what do you do with that?
Well, then you should then be happy being a footstool.
It's kind of like Drew and I were having this conversation about like health and nutrition. And we were talking to a guy about nutrition and eating and
hyperjerk?
No. Drew would say, you know, well, give me some ideas of what I could put in a smoothie in the morning. And he would name some. And Drew would say, no, you don't understand. I have patients that can't even take one pill a day because they're not disciplined. And I looked at Drew and I go, well, then those people are going to fucking die.
Yeah.
Let those
Darwinism,
people be.
Bitch.
You can't explain.
You can't imagine how many people
that.
But that
– yeah.
Okay. So what? You can't gear
that,
medicine.
I'm not cool with that.
But you can't gear the idea of health and nutrition to the lowest common denominator.
I'm talking about the middle. That's the problem.
I don't think that's the middle. I think the middle is like, I know this is bad for me, but I worked too hard today. I got kids at home. I'm going to stop at McDonald's and get some drive-thru. I don't think the middle is what? What's a carbohydrate? I think the middle is people that they recognize, look, there's things I could do that could clean up my diet. I just can't do it right now.
Or I like to eat like shit. Or you know what I mean? Like,
or somebody's gonna abuse me if I eat an apple or celery.
Like you said, people making fun of you for like having plants or whatever. There's this weird. I'm from Modesto, California, and I remember even hearing who made Silicon Valley.
Who made it?
Yeah,
Mike Judge.
My judge right. talked about a similar thing.
I thought you meant the actual entity Silicon Valley.
No, he was like that.
Bill Gates, I guess. I don't know.
No, but I forget where he's from. But it was similar, and he was saying like for some reason when you grow up in towns like that, there's almost like this collective insecurity. And then whenever you try something, like he was saying, like I would make a song and I would do the same thing, like I would like do something artistic, and it's like there's this collective like insecure disdain for you that's like, how dare you?
Well, there's a word
try to not
it?
Like
it's
act
envy.
Like you're not
it's
a
envy.
Yeah
it's envy.
Yeah you're not
envy,
one of us
envy is if you have something I want, it makes me furious, and I have to cut you down to our size. And jealousy is you have something I want. I want that. I'm mad that I don't have it. I'm going to work hard to get it. I'm jealous you have that. Envy is I'm bringing you down.
That's what keeps women down too, by the way.
And I know.
Team up, ladies.
Yeah, I see it. I see it with women all the fuck. It's like they'll be the first ones talking about being oppressed and then fucking undercut each other. I'm like, well, shit, I can't save you. Like, yo, fucking figure that shit out.
I've been saying for years that's got to stop. It starts when they're 12 and it does not stop.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think women?
It's in the biology, and they have to acknowledge it,
right,
and then not do it.
No, we're the same. Drew. No, we're just same. Little boy, little girl, just the same.
If you look at primates, all the way through our primate heritage, the female pods will often use shunning behavior as a way of forming units and aggression and getting other primates to behave the way the group wants them to. So if we were humans evolving on the savannah and all the women got together and shunned one woman and her baby, they're going to die.
They're screwed. Yeah. They're dead. You win in the competition.
And then so the shunning instinct is deeply ingrained in our evolutionary psychology, our evolutionary biology, really. And so it needs to be like acknowledged when kids are 12. They need to prepare for it, talk about it.
I was saying, yo, dude, like getting beat up is one thing, which is like fine growing up getting beat up. Girls shitting on each other via three-way, like that was like hey, did you hear what such and such said about you? And then the other one's listening.
The phone.
It was mind fucking like at a whole nother level.
I was talking about it just the other day with Drew. I said, you know, there was certainly a lot of bullying that I either experienced or doled out growing up. But it was, this guy doesn't like me for some reason. He punched me in the nose. That sucked. But it kind of ended there.
It's a little more black and white.
It really ended there. I mean, a broken nose takes 2 weeks to really kind of readjust. I've watched girls calculate exactly how to hurt a girl the worst and then just drop a bomb on them in front of a party.
Yeah,
and you're just like, what the fuck? I would never – even a guy – I hated a guy. I would think like, I'm going to get my toughest friend to help me beat the shit out of him.
They wouldn't let's all invite her to a party. Let's all invite Mike to a party and pretend like he's not talking whenever he speaks.
Right.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do that.
The amount of time that they're spending reacting – because they're insecure and jealous, they could be making themselves
the
dopest.
I saw someone do it to Susan when we were 40.
Get the fuck it doesn't serious?
End. Am I right? 38 maybe? But listen, we just watched that to our friend Leanne Tweeden, who's a friend and colleague of ours at KBC. And she was one that came forward about Al Franken last week. Mm. And the crap she was getting
crazy.
Were from women.
Every single call that was a guy called up to say, wow, she handled herself with great poise, and I'm glad that these things came forward. There was a lot of women that called to say the same thing. But every call that criticized her or somehow eviscerated Leanne for doing what she did was from another woman.
And it would always start with, she was a swimsuit model. What does she expect?
Oh, yeah, stop
right?
it.
Would it not start with that?
What's her face made? Like that article that the girl from Big Bang wrote. It's our job. Basically, she was saying like, well, this doesn't happen to me because I dress conservatively. And
that's what she said?
Yeah.
My
New York
Bialik.
Times.
Yeah.
Oh.
Look, and I yelled about it?
Yeah.
I was like, listen, you could wear a G-string and pasties to work. It doesn't happen to you because you don't look like that.
It's funny that we...
Margot Robbie could wear a fucking burka. Guys would still be like, oh, excuse me. Yeah. Can I give you my car?
I feel like we come up with reasons to like somebody or dislike. So look, man, if he was a Democrat, so they're riding for the fucking Democrat. You
there's
know what
some
mean?
Of that
like,
going on too.
There's a lot of that going on. Yeah. Like it's so then you attack.
Yeah, then you attack. Well, that attack though to me was like you kind of expect that one. But the one with women were attacking her, I was really surprised.
I think it was a veiled thing. I think it was they couldn't deal with. I don't think there was Republican women calling up fucking I'm sure they
maybe,
were stoked.
Maybe that's just how they got their momentum going through that. Yeah
that's just
could be.
I
could be.
Think it's changing though. I will
Well,
say
I think it is too, and I think this conversation look, so much of what I think is going on in the women's should we call them women's movement
I
now?
Don't
I don't
know
what to call it.
Yeah.
This current social winds that are blowing.
Yeah.
That I really believe this is still the playing out of the 70s. I really believe it.
Yeah.
I think that the 70s, the whole sexual revolution happened because we were unhinged from our biology. You heard me say this the other day. Birth control pill and antibiotics made it safe to have sex.
Yeah, you
and do
go crazy.
You, I mean, it, you would die of a urinary tract infection in 1945 yeah. or 1940. You die of a skin infection. You'd
I've
die,
been dead about 20
you
times.
Get pelvic, you die of pelvic inflammatory disease. You die of syphilis. All these things killed you.
Yeah.
Now it's like, but that's no problem now. And birth control got it all under control. Let's go do our thing. It was sort of foisted on adolescents, which they never – adults didn't even think adolescents would follow suit. Yeah. And that was our era. And we were all like, of course we – well,
yeah,
we talked about it. But nobody talked to the adolescents about what they were up to. And then they foisted it on women. Like, it's, come on. If you're not into this, I mean, what's the matter? You aren't liberated?
Yeah, are you a lame?
Yeah, you aren't, yeah. You're just like a man. We finally, we got it. We got you free of that silly biology. Be just like a man like you are.
Yeah.
And then they came along and no one – was trained or no men were educated about the fact that inside some of these women were dying.
Well, some of these men are dying. I've said it a million times. Like, I still, if I was single, I'd still be banging as many girls as I could. But I'd be the first guy to admit it almost always never made me feel very good when it was over. There was that.
Almost always?
Yeah, sometimes I was like, that was worth it. It was fucking worth it.
I mean, as that guy, I can, like, yo, it's. It's weird, man. It's like you find one thing you're good at, so you feel.
Do you worry that somebody's gonna come up and say, "Hey, that was not cool"? Or
well, on a couple things, I do have a problem with like people giving consent and then taking back consent because they felt bad about it, and that fuck that, dude. Yeah. Like if you
but
say
yes, that's fuck. You're wording as his.
Well, yeah. That's I'm hers. Well. Yeah. Look, man, I got Yelp reviews, man. Like, chicks like, yo, he's grimy as fuck. He'll eat your asshole on the first day, but he is not.
That's a real man.
Yeah, is that nervous laughter? Is that nervous laughter or real laughter, ladies?
That was funny.
Okay. That was legitimately funny.
Because I never know if the women are laughing.
Oh, I just like
because
all
I'm nervous and it makes me uncomfortable.
That speech 100%. You were not creepy.
No,
but you have. But you have to be specific for us. Males to let us
know. You have to be specific for you bitch ass. It was very clear that was just funny. Everyone in the room laughed out loud.
I thought so too.
Let me apologize ahead of time for anything.
It's all good.
Oh, no.
No, I'm apology accepted.
No, but that's the thing. It's like, yo, dude, yeah, that's the crazy shit. Like, I'm writing these books about just having like crazy sex and doing a ton of drugs, and people look at me like I'm the scumbag, but it's all these button up motherfuckers that are like, that are either like super anti-gay, they're getting butt-fucked in the corner, or they're fucking the future's female trying to finger-bang a knocked-out lady and shit.
Yeah.
Like, those are the people you got to watch out for. Like, I'm hey, I'm grimy as fuck. I'll tell you that shit right now. But like,
buyer beware.
Yeah,
that was the original working title of his second book.
Buyer beware.
No, I'm grimy as fuck.
Oh yeah. The editors weren't so into that.
Yeah, but I was telling Drew just that same thing is that you whenever you suppress something,
yes,
it squeaks out the outside like stepping on a cupcake. And that dirty stuff that squeaks out the outside is way worse than it would have been if you would have just openly
just do
eaten
you.
The cupcake, you know?
Yeah. You know, this is like kind of a similar, like, I always tell, like, if you're in a situation you love somebody and they're into weird shit, just fucking do it with them, man. Like, just, because what happens is, like, I know girls whose man, they can't bring themselves to choke them out or dog them in bed or something like that. Guess who they come fuck?
Yeah.
Me.
The grimy guy.
They come fuck me. They go cheat on their man with me. I choke them out and send them the fuck home. Just do what they like. Hit me in the head with a shoe. Whatever the fuck you want. If it's going to get you there, it's going to get you there. Like, just fucking be understanding because it's going to.
I bet they wouldn't tell them.
They're going to express it one
way or another. That's part of the problem. We won't tell the guy that is not comfortable with that.
No, you know what? I think that.
It's a shared responsibility. Yeah.
Because there's a bit of shame. Like, extremely intimate to tell somebody what you really want.
Well, there's a weird thing if the need for that comes from something that was traumatic in childhood, mm-hmm. they split inside between a good self and a bad self, and they can only be naughty bad with the grimy dude.
Right.
And can't even bring themselves to be that way with the other guy that's, quote, good.
Drew, what do you do then when it, like doesn't half that shit, I like degradation, and it's not... It's
towards
not
yourself or towards your partner?
Anything. Like, I just like... And
well,
it's not
what,
surprising
what,
that it came from somewhere bad.
What
do you do with that?
Well, that's what Louis and Weinstein like, too. It just came out a different way, right? That's humiliation, degradation stuff, too. So you have to be careful with it.
Again, on receiver and giver.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
kind of
yeah,
humiliating
both.
For both.
No, that's absolutely what they were up to.
I know, like, I was watching cuckold porn, and, like... I had to stop watching it because, like, it was just, I was like, this is, what am I doing? Like, the guy was, like, jerking off, like, watching through the window of somebody bang his wife. And I'm like, man, that's, it's not going to get any lower than this. Like, yeah.
Did you like that or dislike
fuck
that?
Fuck yeah, I liked it. I liked the fact that the one guy was being used as a tool. I liked the fact that the one guy was used as a chump. And I liked the fact that the one chick was dogging them both.
Well, yeah. The reality is nothing to do with your sexuality, but the fact that you carry those kinds of feelings around is stuff that's got to be kind of looked at, right?
Yeah, so like what do you do? Like how do you, what do you do with that, Drew?
You get in a relationship with a therapist who can really dig into all that stuff with you and make it tolerable, and then make that closeness with that person that goes there with you, that therapist, form a new kind of bond that'll let you try something different. That's what I was talking about earlier. Let you try a different kind of a connection with somebody. Does that make sense?
So
no, doesn't make sense.
Wait, so the therapist fucks my girl?
Yeah. In a relationship
with who? Legitimate question, though. Circling back to where we even started with Hummingbird, by the way, available at hummingbirdbook.com?
Yeah, or Amazon, any of that shit.
All right, available everywhere books are sold.
Yeah, Hummingbird book.
There is an obvious admission that, you know, you're living a dangerous lifestyle, you're doing these things, the drugs, the women, whatever it may be, but you're you're a high-functioning fella. You have a good life, too.
Yeah.
I mean, at least from all my perspective, you're living a enjoyable, high-functioning life. You show up to work every day. You do a damn good job. You go home. You have a nice place. You have, you know.
Yeah.
If it's manageable, even if it is admittedly maybe self-harm, can there be a middle ground where you just carry that out into the sunset? And
well, it has a name. You call it drug abuse, right? Or substance use, a certain kind of substance use disorder, but it doesn't have to progress.
Right.
Right?
Here's how I look at it.
Because he's not I don't think he's an addict, right?
Right.
With you,
I know he's not.
You would go.
I know he's not. You know how I know? Because he said, I have a brand new batch of GHB, and I really want to do it, but I didn't do it because I have to come here.
Yeah.
And me, if I was in my
using
active
days.
Phase, yeah. would be like, well, no, I have to drink half the bottle before I get there.
Yeah, you show part of, fucked up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Destroyed.
He just wouldn't show up. He just drank until he passed out, probably.
Yeah, well, if I showed up, there might be a moment where I looked like I got shot by a sniper and just fucking fall over.
Yeah, it's a controlled crazy.
That's
I guess.
Your GHB
you know what
move,
I mean?
Right.
Like you just it's control crazy.
That is my GHB move. That's why this tooth is fake. I was at
wait,
a party.
Hold up, you did GHB and
oh, I used to drink GHB like a motherfucker.
What
like, I mean, like chug it.
Like?
Horrible.
Disgusting. It's like salt water, right?
I feel like it's the way I put it is like if you're blowing a cyborg and then he busts in your mouth and doesn't tell you.
What is GHB?
Oh, good. Is that what Facebook wants to know?
No, I want to.
You want to know? It's gamma hydroxybutyrate. It's a congener of the sort of Valium-like system in the brain. It binds probably at a different place than Valium, but it's all the GABA. It's a GABAergic medication, so it has sedating properties and causes seizures and causes obtundation and sudden drop attacks on my head.
You can do push-ups, more push-ups.
Well, it
causes
can raise your growth hormone level a little bit.
I was
he's saying all the
a party in
it causes agitation, irritability, and stuff.
Which is strike
fun
number
to smash
one.
On.
Hyperthermic.
Sounds delightful. Bullying
and hyperthermia syndrome.
Food is good on it.
Food is good.
Can we get some later?
I was at a party in Riverside, which is strike number one.
Oh, judging you.
And I went into the stall with my friend to do blow, and next thing I know, I'm face up on the ground, but my face hurts. And he said that we were just looking at each other, and I fell over and face first went into the toilet.
Oh.
And this knocked this tooth completely out. So, yeah.
That's what kept me away from it. To get out of Michigan, I was working at the – I was the bathroom attendant at the gay bar, and it was very popular with homosexuals.
GHB,
yeah.
I think it still is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like bodybuilders and all.
It's come and gone in popularity. Every once in a while, people start to see it go bad because it can go bad with people. Trust me. You get addicted to it. You can have real serious medical problems, psychiatric problems. People get delusional and psychotic and all kinds of crazy stuff using too much of it.
Man, you're like a buzzkill.
I'm just saying. So what happens is that it starts, you know, people start using less of it and then people forget and then it comes back again. So, yeah.
And I've seen motherfuckers turn like baby dinosaur on that bitch. And I'm like, whoa, dude, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. They're like straight pterodactyl. Like, and then projectile vomit. But then when I tried some, I was like, not that bad.
It's very hard to dose, too.
That's the thing
yeah,
right there.
A thimble versus a – who knows?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I remember me and my homie was having this circular argument over, like, I picked him up some fucking bootleg Vicodin, and, like, that was – and he wanted his money back. I'm like, well, give me the fucking fake Vic, and I'll get you your money back. And he wouldn't do it because he wanted to save it. And
anyway.
So we're having a circular argument. My homegirl got tired of waiting for us to get done, and she just grabbed the bottle of G and tried to get on our level, drank a gulp, and fucking – that was – she knocked herself the fuck. I've never seen nobody that fucked up. So I'm like sitting there monitoring her. Like I was upset, like, because I hoped she was all right, but we was also supposed to have sex. So I'm like, God damn it. So like I was on Tinder waiting for her to wake the fuck up. She was gone for a few hours.
By the way, your friend is a drug addict. He has bootleg.
Yeah, bad Vicodin. Trying to get his money back.
But won't let go of it because they're still Vicodin. Yeah.
10% is 10%.
I know, right?
Jude, to bring it to a happier conversation.
This was years ago.
I'm sure.
No.
How did you transition from your place in Pontiac, Michigan, and your position there to, you know, becoming a personality at Shady 45? There was a lot of really interesting kind of stepping stones in between that.
Yeah, it was like, look, man, I got my start on, I kept getting arrested, so I was always on probation and stuff like that, and I never could leave Michigan, and I got out by going on Jenny Jones for the first time. And I was on Jenny Jones, and my...
That was Chicago, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I never left the state, so I was like, I wanted to just go see what a city looked like.
Right.
And my family was like, what are you fucking doing? Like, we're broke, but we're not white trash. Like, don't do this shit. And I was like, fuck y'all, you wasn't here for me, so I'm going to do what I want to do.
How old at this point?
I was 20.
Okay.
19, 20. And I went out there, did it. And everything that my neighborhood prepared me for, like just being able to blaze on one another, it was kind of post-racial the way we made our jokes, because like they would crack white jokes on me, I would crack black jokes on them. There was really no guilt involved. So I didn't know how else to behave. So when a white boy went out on Jenny Jones and like, usually, when black people blaze on white people, they have this white guilt and they're apologizing. There was none of that. And I just was fucking roasting them, no holds barred. And like West Side of Chicago was like, damn, this motherfucker's raw. Like, it was like, fuck, bro. Like by the end of the show, they liked me and they just kept bringing me back. But I wasn't getting paid anything. I'd get paid $300 a show. And
you know, would not even travel.
They'd take care of the travel, okay. But $300.
Eventually, yeah. I took care of the travel.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yo, to save money, I'll go crash on someone's couch. And then, like, my job was to take out their trash and stuff like that just to hustle up. And I was spiking the ratings by a million. But, but
yeah, people, especially
you don't
younger,
have options out there.
If you're listening to this right now and you're 20, you don't understand. Jenny Jones in, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon in 1994,
it's a big deal,
was getting 7 million viewers.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like,
not only that, but also the thing I like about a story is the grit part. You just do what you got to do to get it done. Just pick a direction you go.
Yeah, and I like while I was doing that, I would go bathroom attendant, gay bar, fucking wiping down poles at the hood strip club. I was a fucking rent-a-cop. I washed windows. I do whatever it took to get the fuck out of Michigan because I was so insecure about being poor. I felt so fucked up. We would go places and they would laugh at us, or right. we would go places and they would follow us around like we're gonna steal. I remember I finally got invited to a cool kid party in a new money town called Rochester. And as we were driving over there, we got pulled over by the cops because we were driving in a bucket. And he told us we couldn't come back to the city again.
Well, that's what I wonder sometimes is some of the hassles that African-Americans get into is a classism more than a racism. Mm.
Oh, yeah. My first time in the back of a cop car, I was 4. Mm. They was arresting my mom.
And do you have a similar feeling about police? That
I'm petrified of fucking cops.
Yeah.
And like I dress like a square, and I drive a nerdy car. I drive a Volt, and I dress like a square, and I'm still afraid of cops. I mean, I've been beat up by the cops. Like this is, cops are cops. And you know what happened after I got beat up by the cops? You know what my family said? They said, "What the fuck were you doing, smarting off to the cops?"
Yeah,
they got pistols, bro. Like shut the fuck up. Do what they tell you to do. It's right and wrong doesn't matter sometimes, man. It's like survival. Don't get your ass whooped.
It's so weird, like the specific mentality too. Is like I got a chance to see it. Certainly, I didn't experience it, and I don't ever want to try to pretend like I did. But my mother grew up not knowing how we're going to eat poor, legitimate. Yes. We don't know where the next meal's when it's going to be poor. And my father was very, middle class, normal, happy American childhood. And as soon as I started to branch out in my adulthood and gain my independence and actually start to develop my career and start making, a good amount of money, a happy amount of money, my dad was always like, look into something where you could save this, where you could get something appreciable, be very conservative with it, constantly telling me, don't go buy a new car. You're fine with you. My mother was like, you could afford a Benz. Go buy it. Go buy a Mercedes-Benz right now, because there's this famine mentality to happiness and money.
Yeah, and yet,
it's like,
yet I
and was so scared of anyone outside of our family, maybe even for a second, interpreting that I might be struggling.
Right.
Like, she needed that to show everyone, like, no, I'm not. It's not like I grew up. He's very rich and successful.
That doesn't necessarily, just because you grew up with that kind of mentality, doesn't mean you're going to respond that way as an adult. That's one way they respond. The other way is the other way, which I had with my dad, which is you're not allowed to buy clothes. And tomorrow, the world comes to an end. So,
well, that's depression.
So start burying stuff in the backyard quick.
I don't want to age you, but isn't that depression era?
Yeah, but it's
that's
still,
a different.
Well, but he also
right?
they lost everything and right. really had some questions about eating for a while.
Right, depression era poor is different because it almost happened like a
well,
meteor
like the whole,
hitting.
It's
right?
like the whole society imploded. Maybe right. that had a different impact.
Yeah, it's crazy watching your grandparents and they bring home the McDonald's ketchup packets, and they got right. all the napkins right. and the bread, wrap the bread.
Expired, saving expired yogurt.
So that's your, is that the that's your family's?
That's Italians, yeah.
Yeah,
And then it's kind of funny to your point, like both me and my sister grew up in the same situation, and I make way more money than her, and I'm sure we got the same amount of money in the bank account. Because she is extremely frugal. She will bring everything home with her. And I'm like, fuck that. I got money. Ball out. I ordered a whole menu. Like, I don't think I've been out to eat under $100 ever now. Because I'm dripping with insecurity. Like, it's just insecurity.
Was there ever an actual shell shock? Like, were you ever at a point where you're like, wait a second, I can eat till I'm full?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I always ate till I was full because I was a fat ass. Okay. But, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Though? Yeah. But, like, where you could go to the supermarket and I'm like, oh, my gosh, anything I want I can have? Like, that must have been kind of
like strange. 8 years into Sirius, that's when it was like, oh, I don't have to look at things that much.
Right.
Like, I don't have to look at price tags.
Where are your parents now?
My dad's on welfare. And he lives in government housing. And
how does he feel about your career, your
really
success?
Really weird, man, because he came out here to act
mm-hmm.
and he wasn't successful. And it's killing me right now just to think about it, because it's like I don't know, you don't know, like, he loves me, but I'm sure there's a bit of...
There's a pride there.
There's
resentment.
A bit of resentment. Yeah.
Is there some mental illness on his part?
Yeah, he's fucking crazy. Yeah, he's a lunatic.
It sounds like he's been disabled by something.
Yeah, and, like, it runs in that it runs on that side of the family. Like, there was shock treatment, and, like, my nonny had shock treatment, my nunu, like... I wrote the story. I wrote that.
What's
didn't
a Nunu?
Even, Nunu's Italian grandfather.
Alien.
So like,
Nanu, like, Nanu.
Like, you know, they're fucking Nani and Nunu are fuck yeah, this bastardized. But like the story I wrote that didn't they took out of the hyena was like he grew up. They had like a family dog. It was depression era to your point, and the dog eats one of the chickens.
Uh oh.
The grandfather, my great grandfather, Migio, comes on. Hey, the dog ate a chicken. You know, he's okay. You know, he has a little pasta, drinks a little fucking jar of wine, goes down and hacks the dog to death with a hatchet. And like, that's my Nunu.
Yeah.
Like, he's fucking. So he raised my dad, who raised me. And this is what you're dealing with. We get softer and softer as it goes.
Less physical abuse in childhood.
Yeah, but I'm sure you can. Filipinos, Mexicans, like, this is peasant. This is like peasant. Mm-hmm. This is we're these peasants that come to America and then we're expected to behave a different way. And we are behaving a different way. But don't think that two, three generations ago we weren't fucking shit up.
See, I think that's a really interesting observation. I'm from peasant stock, too, completely.
Yeah.
And you are, well, she has royalty in her background somewhere. but Czech royalty. But
that's Czech royalty.
Of course,
you still fucking slaughter bulls. Still slaughtering bulls and
eating with their hands.
Yeah, destroying tigers with their bare hands and shit.
How dare you?
But
I can say that
when women are modeling.
When people go, when people go, why are all these white guys mass murderers? I started thinking, well, who do you think came over here and then started moving across the country, especially just the wildest of the wild.
Who was crazy enough to make it all the way to the West Coast? Right. Oh my God.
Yeah. Right. And then those guys were mostly white maniacs, right?
Yes.
And so I think, and you ever seen The Revenant?
It's those dudes.
Yeah, yeah. And so
seriously, those fucking dudes insane dudes.
You know, their screws are barely tightened down genetically. And if you do something to them, then boom, off it goes.
You think so?
I suspect.
I feel like
I don't know so, but I've been theorizing this for a while.
I feel like mental health is only like it's like such a first world privilege to address. Like in Africa, you know, there's so much trauma, famine. God knows what is happening to their genes.
Well, the environment is so traumatic.
Yeah.
Right.
So you know, you're just
it's
trying
not just
to
the
survive.
Parents, well, it's not the family's traumatic.
The whole,
it's
where you're living. Yeah.
They always. You can go to some small village in Mexico or Uganda where they're suffering, and you say, "Wow, they have such a much better perspective on life than we do." But at the same time, it could be like certain cancers, and then they're suffering with depression, anxiety. It's just they don't have the doctors to identify it. You know what I'm saying?
And it would be the last thing that they can possibly deal with because you're just trying to eat first, protect your family, then maybe get an education.
Having purpose.
Then maybe realize something's wrong with the fact that.
Then maybe keeping my baby alive, making sure she doesn't die. You know?
Well,
no, but having like very clearly defined purpose and daily structure, I do think that's way more along the lines and it's congruent with how we're supposed to live. As opposed to, and don't get me wrong, freedom.
What does that mean, suppose?
The freedom of
because
the modern day.
Throughout most of human history, that is how we did live.
Right, and
the
that's what I'm saying.
Is how we're supposed to live. It's a little bit of a different question.
Okay, the animal of Homo sapien, I'm saying it's a little bit more appropriate for us to thrive that way than to be given this immense freedom of like, well, I can just go and eat whenever I want. I can go get a job of what I'm interested in and I can have a place to live that is stable. And whereas, you know, I was watching this, you know, documentary. Werner Herzog made this documentary about Siberian hunters, trappers.
Wow.
And these guys, they wake up in the morning. It's like, I wake up. I'm going to go hunt lynx today. The end. And I better get home in time to light a fire so that I can keep warm and not die so my family can eat in there. And it was like, that is my day, and it was structured. And these guys were supremely happy, and so were their wives, and so were their kids. And
I think that as, you know, you don't even have to get up to change the channel anymore. You know what I mean? Like all of these things that are actually supposed to make us make life easier for us is robbing our joy. Because for me to be – like when I wash windows – I scrubbed the window. It was dirty. I clean it. It is now clean. It's instant gratification. I did something. Like, how many people can say, like, I don't – my job now, I don't know if I did something. I sit down. I talk into this thing. I don't know if I accomplished a fucking thing,
that is the
bro.
Most disappointing aspect of radio is that it just kind of disappears in the ethos, right?
Yeah.
I do – and don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to sign up to go do it again, but – you know, when I used to hang drywall, when I used to work in a garage, when I used to – there was a very authentic and very real sense of accomplishment in watching something happen
there
and getting a tangible result.
Psychologists and philosophers who are specifically advocating for that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say like that's like my gratification if I'm cooking. I'm the art was created. Or to me, it's art, you know, or like the thing
was
made.
No, for sure.
By the way, I tried ginger food. I don't know about art.
Do you make Filipino food?
No, my mom's white. I feel like if your mom's white,
you cook whatever your mom cooks, right?
Yeah, which is French macaroons. Yeah,
that sounds pretty fucking good. Too.
I'm down. Yeah.
When I remember going like on this one of my many ketamine benders, and it was like either you can keep getting a fucking maid or you can get one extra gram per month. So like let's just do more ketamine, and I would clean the house on ketamine. And really, what kind of I think what we miss as humans is ritual, and there is a ritual in taking care of yourself. Like people have been cleaning their area since there's been fucking people. And even if your job is to go do like work in the office. Like if you clean your crib, like clean your house, make your bed, wash the dishes, scrub the floor.
Again, people say that what is in your immediate environment is a reflection of how you feel internally. If it's chaotic,
verbally.
It's
I'm a mess, y'all.
John McCain, Senator McCain said the only thing that brought him solace during his internment was. He would get the chance to shave, and he would comb his hair, and he's like, even though I'm only facing my Vietnamese captors, I'm going to do this, the routine,
I mean,
the ritual.
If you were, again, an anthropologist from Mars, and you were just, let's examine the human animal and see what – they seem to – the space in which they live, they do this strange phenomenon where they take these – linen things and pull them over this padded object they sleep on. I mean, that's what we do. That's part of our living.
They also other ones of us come out of other ones' vaginas, which is insane still to me to this day. I walked into a room with my wife.
It's insane to Ginger too, so you're all right.
My wife and a
that alien in your body.
My wife and a nurse walked into a room, and then three people came out. It's fucking nuts.
You just divide it.
It's crazy. I mean, it's still – we've just gotten so used to that. But I watched a human come out of my wife's pussy. That's fucking insane.
You watched that shit?
Oh, yeah.
Did you watch
it? We did home birth. And,
oh, buddy.
And I think
– he still hates his daughter.
I think – I think you can watch birth as a man, as a straight man. You can watch the birth, and one of two things can happen. You can get a newfound respect for women and an appreciation.
An awe, a little bit.
Yeah,
of
and
awe,
like
yeah.
even like find them hotter, you know, find your – or you – it ruins it for you. And I luckily was in the latter.
He was going back and forth.
Former, not the
latter. Went back and forth a little bit.
No, I was way in. And like even when it got really bloody and gory, I was still like right there. I was like, this is – you've got to be fucking kidding me.
Yeah, right?
First off, the placenta came out, and I mean, I'll admit, I was wildly naive. I thought the placenta was like a silver dollar. It's like a big frisbee. It's a big meat frisbee.
It's like the second birth. Yeah.
Boosh, and it's just boom. And I was like, whoa. I literally went, whoa.
What do you think about when they eat that shit?
I ate it.
That you're a cannibal,
did
bro.
I know.
You're a fucking cannibal.
Exactly. He made little capsules out of it.
No, I did not. No, I did not. I made smoothies. I made smoothies every morning for my wife out of raw fucking meat, and she ate
regular.
And I drank them. And then twice I took like a quarter size piece and I cooked it with onions and mushrooms and I fucking ate it.
What does it taste like?
Stop it.
It's liver.
Just like liver?
Yeah. But you're exactly right. I'm a cannibal, and
you
that's
the
only way
like,
I could legally ever do that. I ate human flesh.
As much as he's wanted to his whole life.
Yeah, he's been trying, but
fuck
not alone.
People trip out
that
on cannibalism.
Nervous. That was nervous laughter.
Okay, good. Should they draw the line
but
of
that
cannibalism?
But that was nothing harassing, you know, so that was nothing harassing.
Anything up on Facebook? Any questions or anything?
No, you guys are doing great.
Thank you.
No question. Jude and I had a really interesting conversation about the N-word last time we were together.
It's true.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're talking about.
Just in your private life.
I'm confused.
That's what Jude and Drew were just at the bar.
They're like, hey, let's talk about it. We've been doing a lot of it on HLN.
You're end-dropping?
No. actually, the whole thing, I didn't know he and I were going to talk about this, but I filled the audience with black audience members and then started having a conversation about what is appropriate, when should you? And I was schooled, just don't use it. It's too packed. The history is too much. There's no good time for it, and that should apply to everybody. And Jude said, well, you got a bunch of 14-year-old white kids now. What are you gonna do with that, right? Isn't that sort of?
I did do that. Also, it's like, I don't think anybody should be able to say, not be able to say something based on the color of their skin.
Not be able to say anything. You mean?
Should anyone be censored based on their gender or skin?
It's a
color.
Should anyone be required to speech or against speech? Period. That's a bigger conversation. But this group that I talked to, I did it a couple times.
Imagine that. A bunch of
nobody,
people would like to control you.
Yeah. But we're saying that nobody should use the word black or white or green.
Oh,
whatever.
No.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. Like, that's –
people took it – they took it back.
Well, the thing is like, yo, I work on a hip-hop station. We sell the fuck out of that word.
Yeah.
That word sells fucking albums, bro. Like, what I had a problem was, like, you want to have it both ways. You want to sell this to this whole group of people. You want their money. You want them to buy into the culture, but they can't say these words. And look, bro, I don't say the word. people already think I want to be black as it is. So it's like I'm not using it in my everyday dialogue. But if I'm quoting somebody, if I'm saying the name of a song, I'm not going to be like, oh, N-words with attitudes. Like, what? No, that's – I find that – as an artist, I find that disrespectful to do. But the crazy shit is like – there's a girl that calls black people niggers in this book, and I write about it.
A white woman.
She's actually Hispanic.
Hispanic woman.
And I got flack for some people that for me writing – a story right. that fucking happened.
Yeah.
And it's like writing about the Civil War and being like, hey, dude, how dare you?
And it's like, and this is, and that's kind of what it's like, it's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Like, I'm for freedom.
Now you're offending Asians.
I'm for freedom of freedom of speech. And it's like, and I think I believe in context. I believe in fucking context. So, like
we're getting very McCarthy-esque right now, right?
Yes.
I have not, nor have I ever been a racist. I have not, nor have I ever been sexist. You know, we're going to be having all this mandated speech.
Isn't the Jude is right? That's a tongue twister. By when I'm saying Drew or Jude. Jude is right that context is important because that's what separates us from children.
Yeah,
and my daughter cannot understand subtleties. She cannot understand nuance. She is a 3-year-old. And why do we walk around as full-grown adults pretending that everything is very monolithic?
Same reason we have envy. It's primitive.
Yeah.
It's primitive. Ugh. We've become rather primitive in a lot of ways.
Here's the deal. You were talking about like a luxury, and like it is a luxury to police language. This is what the upper echelon is doing to one another. You think broke motherfuckers are down here trying to tell people what the fuck to say? Like, they don't
I think it was D.L. Hughley who said, only people that are standing around waiting by their Twitter feed to catch some broadcaster in something they find offensive are people that didn't live through Walking on Selma. You know, like people who don't understand what real offense and real suffering is.
I think some people's great-great-grandparents on every side would be embarrassed by their children, by their offspring right now. Like, they would be embarrassed.
Yeah. It's
because
true.
We have a whole group of weak snitches. All they do is tell on each other. Like, I get flagged on Instagram. Like, you're talking about pregnancy. Someone carried you around for 9 months, gave birth to you. Now you're telling on people on Instagram.
This is crazy.
That's your life right now.
And that's one thing that crosses all class boundaries. If there's one thing, people are troll ass bitches that are living in Malibu or were raised in the gutter.
It does. Yeah.
Everyone seems to have this desire to shit on people that they've never even met. My dad asked me
instead of working on themselves.
Yeah, my dad asked me
that's
what
easier.
It is.
It's easier to point a finger.
And try to take somebody down.
What'd your dad say?
My dad asked me what Reddit was, and I said, "Oh, it's where people can go find out about something that they're really interested in, and then talk shit about it all day."
Ginger, do you get an object of negative stuff? I can't imagine. That's weird.
You mean like on social media?
Yeah, Twitter or something.
It's funny. I feel like maybe because I don't put up stuff that really warrants it. I'm trying to think. I don't know. One time I said when I hosted a show for Hulu, like I called Britney Spears an aging pop star, and I was literally just reading the teleprompter.
Well, that's her army
The army came out. And it was so funny because it turned into this thing where they were so racist, but no one could get my ethnicity right. So it was like a fun – it was like this like whole collection of like people getting their – like their
ethnic ambiguity is awesome.
Yeah.
Because I've definitely gotten like, you dirty Armenian fuck.
Yeah, you super Malaysian. Like, I was like, let's try again, bitches.
Speaking of ethnicity, I feel like Filipino is a little bit of a sleeper cell right now. They are working their asses off and like and demanding a lot of their kids and all that stuff that I was talking about earlier. I'm seeing that very much focused in the Filipino community.
Yeah,
that's why the nursing thing. It's like that's a good job. It's a good job.
Yeah,
go.
So my grandma like who almost died the other day because they gave her too much dilaudid. That was what happened there.
Nice.
But of course she was saved because all my aunts were nurses that lived in the hospital and looked at her chart.
Oh, nice.
But I grew up. All my aunts are tiger moms. My Filipino aunts. My cousins like are all piano prodigies and
the Filipino Armenian. You mentioned Armenian. It's another population of people that really
Armenian
playing their kids.
Armenian, the Armenian community, and it's weird. But I think both Filipino and Armenian, unless you grew up in Southern California, you probably don't have any like any idea what that is all about. You know what I'm saying? Like,
would you up in Pontiac?
Yo, dude, there's a group of Filipinos in Michigan, and they had the livest fucking parties. I used
I
to
love,
go there.
They do.
Oh,
they're
my
so
God.
Great.
Big drinkers.
Yo, and I used to try to holler at the girls. They would always shut me down, but I'd catch them out at the mall, and then I could pull them on the side. But it was, yeah, it was the best.
It's the cutest accent. It's the funniest accent.
Well, I love Armenians because I grew up in the east side of, you know, Drew and I grew up in the same area. So I'm very familiar. I had a lot of Armenian friends growing up. And I love it because it's really the last bastion of hope for the unashamedly macho. You know, like even like Hispanic guys, like for the most part, like it's cholos are on the down low now. Yeah. They're just like, hey, this is something I'm on my own. Like Armenian guys do not give a fuck. Open shirt, hairy chest. That's right, bro. Like, what do I want, bro?
All
fuck
the
you.
Cologne, yeah. Leaning on a BMW in a
fully
parking lot.
Macho.
Like, Rudy, do you think so, Rudy? Oh, you, Rudy, come here.
Hey, what's up, dog?
Hey, do you think Armenians are more macho than
I don't know what
your
this
buddies?
Fucking. I don't know what this weirdo sellouts are talking
okay,
about, dog. Like,
I'm
crazy macho, dog.
Okay, I know that. I know that about you. I was really surprised to hear.
I made my balls into a necklace, dog. I cut them off.
Yeah.
On my own balls and huevos. I cut them off. I made bronzed them. And look, now I have a necklace, dog.
But you did cry during Finding Nemo. Isn't that correct?
Shut up. And Finding Dory. Fucking cried. These are real teardrops right here. Not a tattoo, dog.
No, yeah.
These are real teardrops right there.
I remember one of my first friends I had out here was a gay dude, and he took me to a gay bar, and it was the first time I ever saw gay cholos, and it blew. They was like had the wife beaters and dickies like spooning each other, and it fucking broke my brain. I've never seen it. I was like, where the fuck am I?
My head
like,
just blows up.
Yeah, it was really, yeah.
I hope this has been a mind expanding conversation today. Thank you, Jude. It's always a pleasure to talk
Thanks
to you.
Thanks for having me on.
Get the book. It's called Hummingbird. Get it at hummingbirdbook.com. One more time, our friends at The Last House, thelasthouse.net is where you can find out more about that sober living. It's a no-nonsense, just about people who want to get well.
Quit looking
and
at
they
me,
will
bro.
Keep you a year or so. Yeah, well, if you want to, we can get you over there. Ginger, what do you want people to do?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, watch my film. That's all I care about right now. Yeah. Yourdayfilm.org.
Can you watch the film there?
Yeah, I posted it.
Oh,
we're pretty much done with our festival run.
God,
yeah.
It's so good. Everybody, go see it. Yourdayfilm.org. It is not just because we love Ginger Ritter. Jason Ritter was so good. But
he's
the idea of it, it's a really, really, really interesting idea. And you've got to...
You can't know what it's about, but then it'll haunt you for several days.
It will. I'm getting chills just thinking about it. All right. Then we'll see you all next time. Thank you. Now, there are a lot of factors that lead to recovery and particularly success in recovery, but programs that challenge patients, that don't gratify them, that often is the most effective. And that's what we like about Last House Sober Living in Los Angeles. Last House, structured program based on accountability and your actions, living a certain kind of life. Not like those luxury treatment centers that kind of feed the narcissism, entitlement, and selfishness. Last House works to combat the learned helplessness some of these millennials have. Also, device dependency. A lot of places shrink from that one. And the codependent family system that needs a lot of help. The community challenges addicts with disciplinary systems that teaches them consequences for their choices and actions. The program isn't easy. In fact, it's quite difficult. It's supposed to be difficult. It's hard work to recover. Their theory is, much like diamonds, recovered addicts are forged under pressure. If you or a loved one is looking for a program that aligns with so many of the characteristics we believe lead to a successful recovery, please have a look at Last House. Learn more, visit thelasthouse.net. Again, that is thelasthouse.net. Visit them today. All right, it is fall and your immune system is about to get tested, everybody. Not only does the changing weather mark the start of cold and flu season, it's also back to school time when kids become walking petri dishes. While catching something may be inevitable, there is no excuse for letting yourself get dehydrated in the process. So when you're wiped out with cold or flu, the first piece of advice, always to drink plenty of fluids, but we seem to forget that. Now, once you've started feeling dehydrated, it's already too late for water or sports drinks. Rapid rehydration requires the proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water, and nothing gives this like Hydralyte. Hydralyte's formulation is based on established, proven science, and it is the simply best rehydration product I've found in this country. Hydralyte comes in great flavors, orange, berry, lemonade, and it's available in a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or what I prefer, those effervescence tablets. You just drop in a glass of water, a bottle of water, off you go. It's like your own portable IV, but you can do it enterally. Compared to sports drinks, Hydralyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydralyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-use, easy-to-follow instructions. You can find Hydralyte at Rite Aid or online at Amazon.com. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 30% on Hydrolate. Just click the banner on our site, drdrew.com. 30% off. Great deal. Do it.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You live.